runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 278 with guest Kamal Aburi, recorded Thursday, August 23rd, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Kamal Aburi, and he's another premier field engineer from Microsoft. He's based in the New York, New Jersey region, supporting dedicated customers, improving their IT health, empowering their IT teams to drive successful deployments, plan for supportability, and improve systems availability. He worked in the IT industry for 14 years on various Microsoft technologies, helping enterprise customers with Exchange deployments, migrations, and training, and he is a guest blogger at mrproactive.com and a frequent speaker at the New York Exchange User Group. Welcome, Kamal.
Thank you, Richard.
Hey, I'm excited that there is a New York Exchange User Group, because I find the developers love making user groups, and IT folks not so much.
Yeah, actually, this user group has been there for almost 8 years now. You know, I think the last time I heard, there were only two sessions that were missed in the last 8 years.
Wow. So it's steady, too. Is there something about Exchange? I mean, I often joke that Exchange is the only piece of software that Microsoft makes that I'm genuinely afraid of.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is, you know, it's a tool that everybody uses, you know, in their daily lives. You know, email has been embedded into everybody's life so much that, you know, it has to be there, it has to be available all the time. And so the product has grown so much that, you know, there are a lot of things that happen and a lot of things that needs to be configured to make it work.
Well, you wouldn't think that mail was so bloody complicated. It's mail.
Yeah, for sure. You know, when people ask me the same question, you know, when I'm talking to my family members, you know, I just click send and it goes to the other person, right?
Yeah.
And I tell them, you know, it's not as simple as that. You know, it has to go through a lot of machines or servers to get from the source to destination. You know, it involves, you know, the location for your mailbox to store the data. It involves mail to be processed. It involves mail to be changed, and then, you know, if it is going to the internet or an external source, it has to go through all the changes. It has to, you know, checking for spam, checking for antivirus, and then get to the destination and finally reach out to, you know, the receiver you have sent the email to.
Yeah. Well, and then there's all the other things around what's made Exchange and Outlook so successful, which is really the contact management, the schedule management, all the other things. I mean, mail is not just mail.
Right, exactly. And that's the big advantage with Exchange, is that collaboration around it. It creates a complete platform for providing a collaboration within an enterprise or within your work world, right?
Yeah, and at the same time, we are trying to commoditize this service. I mean, that's really what Office 365 seems to be, is, look, I know you like running your Exchange servers, but, you know, isn't it better to have a third-party backbone to it?
Yeah, exactly. And Office 365, right, it basically gives you that flexibility. Mm-hmm. You know, you may not be an organization that's operationally mature to run an Exchange environment. You know, you may be an environment who is looking to do upgrades and be on the latest technology all the time. And Office 365 is a good place to start, where it gives you that flexibility, it gives you that opportunity to be on the latest and the greatest all the time, and empowers your IT people to do a lot of things that you were not able to do before being on premises.
Well, and especially when I think about, you know, some of my listeners using small business server and the like, and you know, you start to outgrow that. You've got 50 mailboxes going in that little Exchange server. And you're like, am I ready to upgrade to full bore Exchange? I don't have 24/7 tech support and you know, my own data center and stuff. And these days, I can't imagine justifying building one. I know if you own one, that's one thing. But if you don't have one today, with what's available, why would you do it?
Yeah, exactly. And that is where, you know, people are looking into Office 365 or cloud-based email, right? Like, do I have the support staff? Do I, you know, most of the things that we see people talk about are three things, right? The reducing the IT costs is the primary driver, and increased agility in terms of getting them that flexibility, you know, larger workloads, I need larger mailboxes, or, you know, a new business requirement comes in where you need to expand on your mailbox size, or you just made an acquisition, bought another company, bringing 100 more users.
Right.
Instead of bringing up new servers, you know, Office 365 gives that, you know, increase on demand.
Yeah, pretty painless addition. And, you know, I rescue around the value proposition, but the bigger one when I've been talking to my customers is this, it's the skill set. Do we really want a full-time Exchange person? Do we really want to build out this infrastructure ourselves when you can dial it up?
Exactly. As we discussed initially, you know, because Exchange became such a large product, the skill set that's needed to support it has grown. Unless, you know, you are a large organization, you're not able to accommodate, having dedicated people just support Exchange.
Sure. I've certainly looked at, when we were looking at some of my customers wanting to move to 365, there's the whole ADFS bridge and the ability to sort of do a seamless migration, which I think is very cool. But is it really just a migration? Is it a temporary thing that you stand up just to be able to get everybody off the local servers and all on to the cloud servers?
Yeah. So on the topic, right? So it basically comes down to three important factors. Now, Microsoft Office 365 gives you the flexibility of what we call email on your terms.
Right.
Now, everybody is looking into the cloud. Everybody wants to get into the cloud, but, you know, the cloud may not be the solution for all the workloads that you have in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, cloud may not be, you may have certain legal requirements, for example, where, you know, you may need to have certain mailboxes to be on-premises servers.
Okay, can you cite a specific example here, Kamal? Is this, you're literally talking about a government regulation that requires a mailbox to exist in a certain location?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly a good example where, you know, you, like, say if you are a company that's spread across multiple geographic locations.
Sure.
US and Europe. Europe may have regulation which says, you know, you cannot store my data on a US server.
Okay.
Right? And if that's the case, where you definitely want to use this flexibility that you have with the cloud, but at the same time, you may have a need or you may have a workload which doesn't fit into the cloud.
Okay.
And that's where you know, the Exchange server, Exchange Online, or Office 365 gives you that email on your terms flexibility where you can have your whole environment on-premises, or you can have your whole environment in the cloud,
mm-hmm.
or you can have a hybrid scenario where you have certain workloads on the Exchange server on-premises and certain workloads when I mean workloads is users or mailboxes,
mm-hmm.
on Office 365.
And just for my own edification, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't the main Office 365 site these days in Ireland?
Not exactly. So Office 365 is spread across multiple data centers.
Okay.
You know, there are multiple data centers within US. There are data centers, you know, spread across the world. And depending on how you sign up and during the sign up, when you sign up for a tenant within Office 365 space,
mm-hmm.
Where you specify the location for your primary site or, you know, where your mailboxes are going to be. And that's what automatically decides where your mailboxes will reside.
Right.
Now, currently, from my understanding, there is no support for a single tenant to be available in multiple data centers in multiple geographical locations.
Okay.
So I know that from my understanding is that they are still working on it at this point.
But I can't go down and say this mailbox and this mailbox and that server, that kind of thing.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the things, you know, when we talk to customers about, you know, thinking about going to the cloud, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not that, you know, it's not because everybody is going to the cloud that you should also move to the cloud. You have to think about the workloads or you have to think about the things that may not fit the scenario, right?
Right.
A couple of good examples I always, when I speak to customers that come up is public folders. You know, that's one of the favorite things within Exchange world, and that's not available in the cloud, for example, currently.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are plans that are being evaluated with the next version of Exchange where they're talking about public folders in the cloud, but currently, you know, the Office 365 doesn't support public folders. Another example is if you have multiple AD forests, currently, unless you go through what we call a Microsoft Premier deployment process, it doesn't support multiple forests if you have multiple Active Directory forests.
Okay.
One of the things that most people get confused is Office 365 is very highly configurable,
mm-hmm.
meaning you can configure a lot of things, but it is not customizable.
Right.
You cannot customize, say, the OWA web page that comes in front of the user. You cannot customize, you know, the things around that you have the flexibility when you are on-prem. Another good one is life cycle, right? Like when you are on premises, you are controlling the life cycle of your deployment, meaning you will upgrade your servers on your own terms.
Right.
Like say, you know, you want to put in a new version Exchange, you control when it goes. But with Office 365, you know, the maintenance, the deployment, the life cycles is all controlled by Office 365.
Okay.
It's not that they don't give you enough notice. They will give you enough notice for you to plan, to make sure that you are ready for this migration to the new platform. But, you know, you have to follow their timelines. And if you're all good with, you know, these set of roadblocks, you know, the Office 365 gives you that flexibility to go there, give you that opportunity to expand your IT infrastructure into the cloud.
Yep. Of course, the interesting challenge then is if they keep updating Office 365 and you're still running a portion of this in a hybrid mode on your own site, do you have to keep your stuff up to date with theirs?
Yep, for sure. So as, for example, the current Office 365 with the hybrid deployments will require Exchange 2010 Service Pack 2.
Right, which is pretty much the latest thing that's out there. And I think I just put hotfix 4 of SP2 on my server.
Yeah. Release update 4, yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually not all the time it's a requirement, but it does come into a scenario where they'll say, you know, in order for you to be in this coexistence mode, you have to deploy, you know, a certain service pack, or you have to deploy a certain roll-up update.
Sure. And Office 365 is going to dictate the terms on that. When they go to update, they're going to say, when we do this update, you're going to need to be here to keep interoperating properly.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
It's an interesting consideration there because, you know, you said we've got a multinational. You've got some of your users in the U.S., some of your users in Europe. You start looking at 365, you're really only going to be able to go to one or the other at this point. And if you've got European regulations that require European mailboxes to stay in European servers, I mean, that would probably dictate the terms right there that I would run everybody out of Europe because I don't think the Americans care all that much if the data is running in Europe. But if I read somewhere Luxembourg requires their mailboxes of mail that originated in Luxembourg to reside in Luxembourg.
Exactly. Yeah. There are certain European countries that have that restriction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you get the flexibility, right?
Yeah, so, you got to run a hybrid there. I have to have an exchange mailbox server living in Luxembourg for my Luxembourg users.
For your Luxembourg users.
Right.
And that's the hybrid deployment, you know, makes complete sense because, you know, hybrid deployment from an exchange perspective is, you know, it's like rich coexistence, right?
Yep.
You have a complete fidelity between the organizations. From an admin perspective, there is no change. You know, they manage everything from their on-premises, you know, workstations using the on-premises tools. You know, user provisioning happens on-premises. And you know, it's unified GAL, free busy sharing.
All of that works right up to the cloud and back down. So there's got to be this, I mean, how much bandwidth do I have to dedicate to that pipe between Office 365 and my Exchange installations?
Yep, so that's a good question, and that's something you, network is another thing that you have to consider when you are deploying Office 365, and primarily, you know, the data center location, right? So think about your users in Asia-Pac, for example, and your server being in U.S.
Yeah.
Think about the latency.
That's, you know, 250 milliseconds every time.
Right, right. And if your client's, you know, Outlook 2010 with cache mode deployed, the most of it is shielded from the users.
Yeah.
But again, that's again something that you have to consider in terms of...
Yeah, your OWA experience is going to be pretty rough.
Yep, yep.
Now, I mean, I'm still thinking through the scenario I'm trying to paint where US users, or European users, maybe somebody in Luxembourg. I mean, if I'm all on-prem, I'm already running a server in Luxembourg. If I have that requirements, I have to follow that anyway. So I'm used to probably multiple data center distributed exchange anyway, you know, perhaps through some kind of secure network. I mean, I think part of the challenge here is I've got to communicate with you as Office 365 over public internet. And I may not be as comfortable with that as I am with my existing backbone that's all leased line between my offices.
Yeah, I mean, you know, security has been a big concern, but, you know, if you look at how Office 365 is configured, especially in the hybrid mode, you know, they do a lot of authentication, they do a lot of, you know, TLS-type encryption to actually transfer the data.
Okay.
So when that mail connects, you know, from the Office 365 world to your world, when you deploy this hybrid configuration, it is actually a requirement that Office 365 talk to your mail servers directly, specifically Exchange servers directly, because they do authentication based on TLS to validate that, you know, they are sending that information to the right source.
Right.
They use certificate validation to actually authenticate that particular thing. What we call it in technical terms, we call it like receiver authentication and domain validation.
Right.
Which basically provides that validation for it to make sure that it's going to the right destination.
So it's double-edged TLS. Both ends are providing public keys and exchanging, so that both the origin and the destination know each other.
Right. Right.
Okay. I mean, for me as an IT guy, the thing that I'm used to my mail server speaking to the world, right? I mean, that's how mail works. I think the thing that chills most IT folks is I'm exposing AD to the world, and I'm not used to that, right? I've got to stand up an ADFS server and then basically provide a path to Active Directory to the outside world.
Right. Again, you know, it's not a requirement per se to open up it to the entire world. Now, again, remember ADFS is technically not a requirement for hybrid deployment.
Oh, really?
It is. It's not a requirement. It's just an add-on to provide a single sign-on experience to the users.
Okay.
And that's where it's recommended. It's not a requirement, I should put.
What is it like to live without that? Like, how crippled am I?
Yeah, I mean, it does create a lot of help desk issues from what I've seen, because now users have to remember two usernames and passwords, right?
Because
they have to have Office 365 authentication along with their AD authentication.
Now, you've already hinted at this. This is not exposed to the internet per se. These are known endpoints. I can say, hey, this ADFS server only speaks to the following machines because it only needs to talk to certain points on the Office 365 cloud.
Right. I mean, in certain scenarios, right?
Yeah.
But if you are exposing, say, for example, your users are able to access their email from external sources.
Right. So my salespeople on the road connecting through a hotel pipe, they need to be able to speak to that ADFS server?
Right. Because, you know, at that point, you know, certain workloads, again, certain, not all the workloads, but certain workloads do need access to the ADFS server. But
right.
Again, it's not a requirement to open up your ADFS server directly. You can put an ADFS proxy in the DMZ,
mm-hmm.
which will, you know, basically provide that protection against your credentials. But again, ADFS is a SAML-based authentication, right?
Yeah.
Technically, you're not exposing your Active Directory as a whole to the world. You're just, you know, giving a source or giving a path to pass your username and password through the ADFS server. And the ADFS server is the one that actually talks to your AD, authenticates you, creates the token, mm-hmm. and gives it back to the requester.
Which is, it's a secure path, but to me it speaks of, if I'm getting down this hybrid path, my security officer has to spend time understanding how we're going to connect ADFS through the proxy and the DMZ to negotiate these SAML tokens properly. We can't just throw stuff up. This is not a trivial bit of effort. You've got to do it right.
Right, right, for sure. And that's where, you know, what I usually suggest customers do is there is an Exchange Office 365 Hybrid Deployment Guide for mm-hmm. enterprises, which is actually a step-by-step process to help you understand what's the planning involved, what, you know, who are the people, what are the resources that I need, and a step-by-step guide on what needs to be done to actually get there, you know, to completely deploy Office 365.
Sure.
Just, you know, just search for that Office 365 deployment guide, and it's a good step-by-step. But I see your, as you said, your concern on that. And the current customer I'm helping with the Office 365 evaluation is going through that security analysis, and their security team is a big part of their decision making process.
Sure.
And you know they're completely involved in evaluating the need on single sign on and how they can deploy it securely.
And I'm coming at this. We've done shows in the past about Office 365 where this infrastructure was temporary to facilitate migration. But when you talk about hybrid, this is permanent, so it needs to be secured properly.
Right, exactly. Usually, again, when we talk to customers, these are different scenarios where mm-hmm. they need these hybrid deployments. One scenario is, you know, they are a very large organization and they want to go to Office 365. Now, large organizations, you know, you cannot do what we call a cutover migration where you switch everybody in one day.
Yeah.
That's not possible.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, you deploy a temporary Office 365 hybrid deployment, provide that seamless interface for temporary time, you know, maybe a 6 month period or 1 year period, and eventually leading to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
The second scenario was you coexist for a longer term. You know, again, as we discussed, there could be certain workloads which have to be on both sides of the environment. Another good example that my customer that I'm helping with is using for a long-term coexistence is having the mailbox on premises, but have an archive mailbox on the cloud.
Ah, okay, interesting.
Yeah, so you know, their thought process is, you know, I have my live mailboxes, live mail data that I access frequently on my local servers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's faster, it's easily accessible. I don't have any limitations in terms of, you know, impacting the user experience. But archive is the mail that I access once in a while.
Yep.
It's mail older than any year. And I want that large mailbox, you know, the 25 gigs or the 100 gig limit that I have in Office 365.
Sure. So yeah, you can run the bigger volume there. Do you also sync your current mail so that if you're, you could use it as a disaster recovery strategy too?
Currently, I mean, they don't have any solution to use it as a disaster recovery strategy per se in the coexistence phase. You know, you're asking like, you know, can I have a server that's on-prem and replicate that infrastructure to the cloud?
Right.
Yeah, they don't have anything planned. I don't know if it is being planned, but I don't think there is something that will work in that way in the Office 365 space. One way they could, or customers could evaluate and Microsoft could look into, is you using the Windows Azure, you know, platform to, you know, build up a VM or build up a services around Azure, to use Azure as an extension to your infrastructure to do that replication. But I don't think it's currently being evaluated.
Yeah, and it just seems, I haven't seen anybody in any level of the cloud really doing cloud as a DR strategy. It just seems so obvious to me, but maybe it's just me that I see that and other people are not really latching onto it.
No, I agree. I actually had a couple of people, during the New York user group meetings, actually asked that particular scenario, because it does make sense for, small customers who don't have a DR site per se in a different location. You know, why can't they just spin up a, you know, Azure platform based environment to, you know, bring up virtual machines and just start replicating data, or making that a part of their overall infrastructure.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always something important to me. So, I mean, we were describing this concept of hybrid. Is that actually a mode? Is it, you know, does Exchange run differently and Office 365 run differently because we're, quote, hybrid, as opposed to gone fully to the cloud or staying fully on-prem? Like, what behaves differently when we're like that?
Yeah, well, Nothing different from from your Exchange management perspective. Mm-hmm. It's just hybrid is a concept where there are certain components that you deploy to bring that coexistence into the environment.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the components that we are talking are, you have your on-premises servers. You know, you primarily need at least one Exchange 2010 server with Service Pack 2.
Yep.
And you know, if you need HA, you need multiple servers. That particular server we usually call a hybrid server. This hybrid server talks through what we call the Microsoft Federation Gateway. Now, this is a trust broker that helps with the authentication, that establishes the trust between your on-premises environment and your cloud environment.
Okay.
And then you have the DIR sync, or the directory synchronization server. This is another server that you have to bring up to do the directory synchronization between your Active Directory, you know, and the Office 365. Basically, it takes certain attributes from your on-premises user objects and syncs them to the cloud. There are also certain attributes that do come back to your on-premises environment,
mm-hmm.
Usually required for, say, if you have your archive in the cloud, you know, certain attributes about that archive information has to be written back to the AD infrastructure. Passwords don't get synced. There are a list of attributes that get synced. There are about, I think, 60 to 70 attributes.
Right. And all of this over a secure pipeline. I mean, everything's encrypted stuff, but
yeah,
you're still not going to move really sensitive data. You don't need to.
Right. Yeah, it's only, it's all HTTPS. It's all, secured. Most of it is all HTTPS based. Mm-hmm. Mail, it's, TLS or SMTP. So the other components, it's ADFS. Again, it's recommended to have that single sign-on, provide that single sign-on for the users.
Okay. And everybody wants that. It's just you got to deal with the extra challenges of making that work.
Yeah.
Now, this is really the first version of Office 365. I don't want to talk about BPOS. That was its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first, I think Exchange 2010 has morphed substantially in the past 2 years with the two service packs. They're really trying to evolve that. But there's another version of Exchange coming. I don't know what you're able to talk about or not talk about, but where are we at with this? Because I got to think we're going to take a jump forward in this hybrid mode with the new version of Exchange.
Yeah, for sure. So with Exchange 2010 Service Pack 2, I mean, the hybrid coexistence has been available from Exchange 2010 Service Pack 1.
Right.
But the number of steps that were involved to get there, just from an Exchange configuration perspective, it used to take me, when I was doing this in my own lab, took me about 4 days to completely configure it, right?
Yep.
And so the number of steps that were involved were tremendous.
Well, and you're the expert, man. If it takes you 4 days, what's it going to take me?
Yeah, exactly. And that's where, you know, that's what I like about the product group, the Exchange product group. They listen to our customers and make changes in such a way that it makes it easier as they learn things. So with Service Pack 2, what they did was they did an improvement in what we call a hybrid configuration wizard. They created this, you know, step-by-step wizard. You know, you just have to give it parameters and just click next. And then it cut down those steps by 50. You know, like
right.
There are no more manual 50 steps that needs to be done. And that's what happened with Service Pack 2. And with Exchange Server 2013, they're extending that, you know, whatever they did with the Service Pack 2 and making it much more easier to have the flexibility to include, for example, multiple AD forests that
right.
are coming up. They bring up supportability to support edge transport server roles in
mm-hmm.
the hybrid deployment. Configure it. You know, they made it much easier with the configuration from a hybrid perspective, and you know, everything is through the web-based interface right now. So with 2013. So.
Well, this just sounds pretty cool. I'm glad we're getting to this particular place. Obviously, everything's moving in flux. I got to think that as 2013 comes together, we're going to see it implemented on the Office 365 side as well, right?
Yes. So, you know, the product, from what I understand, has been developed overall with, you know, with Office 365 or cloud in mind, you
mm-hmm.
know, the primary, and bringing that coexistence, bringing that, making sure that, you know, whatever we do in the next version is flexible enough in the cloud, flexible enough for the customers to
yeah.
be, to get to the cloud, you know, or be on-prem or be in a hybrid, whichever they want to choose, you know. I think the next version will provide more seamless integration, makes it much easier for, you know, for admins to configure the Office 365 or hybrid deployments.
Yeah, I got to hope that more and more characteristics of Exchange will become configurable rather than customizable, so that we can actually get all that stuff in our cloud implementation as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Kamal, it's been great talking to you. I really appreciate your insights around these hybrid deployments. I have a feeling that this is going to be the common practice going forward, that all in-prem or all in cloud is the anomaly, that we're always going to end up with a mix.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Again, as we said, you know, it all depends on what customers are looking for. You know,
right.
if all their solutions need to be in the cloud, they can be in the cloud. But you know, large enterprises, typically it's a scenario where, you know, they always have certain workloads that have to be on-prem, and that's where you get that flexibility with Office 365.
Well, and I also find when you get to really large organizations, they've already got the 24/7 staffing and the skill set and sufficient infrastructure that it's like they need the cloud least. To me, it seems like it's the smaller operations and the mid-side operations where this is so compelling. It's just that they're still going to run into these regulatory challenges where they can't just go cleanly into the cloud. They need a few things to stick around.
Yep, for sure. As we said, you know, that's where you get that flexibility, right? Depending on your business need, you know, you can make the decision. One thing I do suggest for the customers is there is a decision guide that can help you with, you know, do I need Office 365? Do I need the hybrid mode? You know, where do I, you know, what do I decide? What do I use in terms of where I want to be? What I would suggest them is to look for the deployment options white paper, which will give you scenarios that you need to think about on making the decision easier.
And I'll provide links on the show notes for all of those files, as well as the migration guide or the deployment guide. And Kamal Burry, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been great talking to you.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.